All right. Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the FY24 cycle of the annual report work group. I'm Peter Karras with ONC. Just like to thank you for joining us today. I'll be serving as the designated federal officer for today's call on behalf of Seth Pazinski. A reminder that all work group meetings are open to the public and public feedback is welcome. Members of the public can type comments in the Zoom chat feature throughout the meeting or make verbal comments during the public comment period that is scheduled towards the end of the agenda. I will now begin roll call of the work group members. When I call your name, please indicate that you are present. Let's start with our co-chairs, Madel Briggs Melanson.
Hello, good afternoon, everyone.
Eliel Oliveira.
Good morning, everybody.
Hans Botsendijk.
Good afternoon.
Hannah Galvin.
Hello, good morning.
Jim Jurgis.
Present.
Anna McAllister. Shyla Blend.
Good morning, everyone.
Sarah DeSylvie.
Good morning.
Steve Eichner.
Morning.
Kike Lemo-Oshun-Kenton. Rochelle Prosser. Is there anyone who just joined who did not get a chance to indicate their presence?
Anna McAllister just joined.
Welcome, Anna. Thank you. And now I would like to turn it over to Madel for her opening remarks.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Peter, and good morning/afternoon to the entire annual report work group. We're very excited for this to be our official launch into this year's report work group, and especially alongside our brand new co-chair, Eliel. Very excited, Eliel, to have you as my co-chair of this work group. I think all of us are going to have such a fantastic year, and especially bringing in a lot of these relevant as well as pertinent topics that we do want to make sure that not only aligns with the overall kind of focus of ONC, but also those topics that we all feel are very important to place within this annual report. And so, Eliel, I'll turn it on over to you for your opening remarks.
Thank you, Madel, and good morning, afternoon, everyone. Great to be here with many of you again. I'm very excited about this year's annual report work group work that's ahead of us. You're going to see in some of the things that we're going to cover there quite a few important points, and I don't need to tell you that based on the previous meeting that we have with you all. We heard quite a bit. You have so many great ideas, and we're excited about start incorporating all those in the new annual report. So thank you, everyone, and I'll turn back to you, Madel.
Excellent. Thank you. And so what you see in front of you is our meeting agenda. So of course, we've already done the call to order and roll call as well as the opening remarks. What we're going to then proceed on to is the discussion of our work group plans, then a discussion of potential topics for the high-tech annual report for fiscal year 2024. This is the time period that we really want all of you to bring some of your additional ideas to the table for us to start sorting through what we feel needs to be in this year's annual report. Then we will proceed to public comment and then adjourn at that moment. Next slide. So, of course, this is our official annual report work group membership as well as the ONC staff. I believe everyone heard when Peter went through the roll call, but we're very excited to have 11 members of the annual report work group this year. So we do have one additional slot open. And so if there is another high-tech member that would like to join us, then they would be able to be considered for that slot. And so this is the first time that we've expanded our membership, and we feel like that is so incredibly important due to all of the various different insights as well as perspectives from high-tech membership. We want to make sure that we incorporate all of that expertise within our annual report. And then also you see, of course, our outstanding ONC staff below all of the various different members. Next slide. Great. So, Eliel, I'll turn it back on over to you for discussion of the work group plans.
Sounds good, Michelle. Thank you. And here we go. So next slide, please. So here is the meeting schedule for the annual work group that we have. Quite a few meetings, and as you can see, several months, but it's not, I would say, not long enough for us to cover so many topics of interest that we have so far. So for this meeting, we're going to develop the list of topics for the annual report in a bit. And then in July, we're going to crosswalk those topics along with in August as well. We're going to work on that crosswalk. In September, we'll develop the draft. And in October, we actually take it to the HITECH for review. And in November, the goal is then to get approval and proceed before Christmas to get that transmitted to Congress. So that's the plan that we have in front of us. And next slide, please. And this is the full schedule for the committee. So you can see the dates here. I think it has already been coordinated with the members. And it's in your calendar. But again, on June 13, we're going to update the status of the report. In July, we meet again to do the same. August, mid-August, hopefully everybody back from school at that point, and continue on September 12 to update the status of the annual report development and go on to finish to approval on the final in November after our review in October. So that's the plan that we have ahead of us. And with that, I'll turn it back to you. Actually, I have one more slide. So for the work plan for the annual report, right, we meet in this compressed timeline, as you can see, seems a lot, but it is compressed for the amount of work that goes on in this work group, and transmit that final report to the national coordinator, to Mickey, at the end of the calendar year. That's the goal. The work group develops the topic lists and present it to HITECH in June. The work group develops the crosswalk document over the summer and presents to HITECH in August. And then the work group reviews the draft in September and presents to HITECH in October. And after further edits, the HITECH votes to approve the report and transmit it to the national coordinator in November. And then at that point, ONC forwards the final report to the HHS secretary in Congress to post on healthit.gov. That's the plan in different flavors, but I hope it gives you a good picture of where we're going. With that, now I turn it back to you, Mendel.
Thank you, Elio. And so really to amplify what you just mentioned, we are on a shorter time frame than what we have been in the past. And that's why this meeting is so incredibly important. But I would say already, knowing this group and knowing all of the fantastic ideas that come out of this group, if we do not get to discussion of all of the topics, we will still be able to submit some of our proposed topics directly offline as well, and then we can review all of those again at the next meeting. And so discussion of potential topics for the HITECH Annual Report Work Group. So next slide, please. So I'm going to turn it on over to Peter to provide to us an overview of what we discussed last year in terms of the HITECH 2024 work plan and how our annual reports directly align with some of the ONC priorities. So Peter, I'll turn it to you on this one.
Great. Thanks so much, Mendel. So for purposes of this report, and just to reorient these HITECH members, the HITECH evaluates the health IT infrastructure landscape for gaps, opportunities, and recommendations. And the HITECH annual report focuses its evaluation on specific topic areas. What we have here is a list of topic areas that tie into our broad priority areas of advancing health equity, interoperability, privacy and security, and patient access. The Cures Act requires the HITECH to develop an annual report to be submitted to the Secretary of HHS and to Congress each fiscal year. So this report does comply with that directive by describing the landscape of health IT infrastructure. And that way that informs ONC's work in support of rulemaking and ONC core activities around standards, exchange, certification, coordination. So up on this screen is a list of topic areas that tie into our broader priorities across our target areas and what we're looking leverage the high tech members to inform in terms of policy core activities. And with that, I'll turn it back over to Madel.
Thank you, Peter. And the reason why we wanted to reinsert this slide as a reminder is because during our annual report work groups, we tend to have a fair amount of discussion of what are ONC's priorities and where are the topics and what are the potential topics that we should actually include in the annual report to help to assist and inform ONC, but also, of course, we want to make sure that we're bringing additional topics into our annual report work group that may not be on ONC's radar or part of their overall work plan in order to be, again, that forward-facing committee and work group as well. And so we just wanted to just reorient everyone to what ONC has stated are some of their key priorities, with the first and the second box in particular, what they mentioned to us last at the end of last year. And then, of course, the third box still being very important, but a little bit farther down on their list of the items that they're working on. And so we just wanted to keep this in mind as we proceed forward for proposing some of the potential topics. Next slide. So what do we need to do in order to propose the potential topics for the annual report work group? So the next thing we're going to do is go directly into the draft list of potential topics. And the primary discussion questions for all of us as the work group members are there any questions or comments about the draft list? What other topics should be added to the draft list? Again, those that help to support the ONC priorities, but then also those that we feel are incredibly important and or urgent in order to get into the annual report for this work for this fiscal year. And then also, should any topics be removed from the draft list? All right, next slide. Next slide.
We're switching to the document.
We're switching to the document. Okay, great. Thank you, Excel. Appreciate it. So this is our potential topics for consideration that was sent to all of the work group members. And I'm going to go through the first two target areas, and then Eliel is going to go through the rest of them. And again, what we're going to do very quickly is just review these topics and then open it up for full discussion from the entire work group to see, are any of these like the topics that we want to have, or are there some areas that we want to include some additional topics for? So the very first one is supporting interoperability standards, laboratories, and pharmacies. And so this was suggested from Keith Campbell as well as Hung Lu, of really looking at assuring overall data quality. And so that was something that has been a theme that has been continued throughout many of our high-tech meetings, that as we're thinking about standards, as we're thinking about even new data models that are going to go off and inform artificial intelligence and other forms of technology, really making sure that data quality is at the core piece of all the work that we're doing. And so the description of the issue is as stated, and that data model should contain information about methodology to make sure it's easier for pharmacies and laboratories to adopt the recommended data elements and to share them, as well as with artificial intelligence. And this future recommended activity should be to assess what current data elements are sufficient for this purpose, or if additional data elements are needed. The second quick item, and then we'll pause at the end of this section to go back and really open it up for discussion, is supporting image interoperability. This was brought up from Michael Chang as well as Sarah DeSilvi in the interoperability section. Interoperability of radiologic images is increasingly important in medical care. However, radiologic images can play an important role in patient care, yet lack many of the interoperable records can lead to repeat imaging due to that lack of access to previous images. And so those are some of the things that we want to start thinking about. And then we'll kind of proceed on from there of where we think that this topic should be. And then the third one, and then we'll just pause to go over these three, is going to actually, let's pause right now with interoperability and open it up to the committee, to the work group, to see if there's any thoughts or ideas on these first two, before we move on to privacy and security. So Ike, I see that your hand is up.
Thank you so much. I think looking at the first item, it's important to include public health as part of that component. So as we're looking at interoperability across laboratories and pharmacies, who are they needing to be interoperable with? It's not just healthcare providers, it's with the entire really spectrum of the healthcare community, including hospitals, providers, public health, ambulatory care, LTC, long-term care, et cetera. So I think that's an important part of that capture.
Absolutely. And I agree with you in every single way. Well, and Jim, you mentioned something in the chat, which is also very important. Do you want to comment on that?
Yeah. Hey, thank you, Mandel. Yeah, one of the questions around lab interoperability is, my understanding is it's been a bit of a challenge to try to figure out an appropriate incentive to get the appropriate agents to comply. And so just keeping in mind, I know the quad squad that ONC has assembled up, which, you know, I'm a part of too, is multiple different agencies trying to understand what levers they might have to actually incentivize and influence. So because if certification standards are developed, they'll have to be a lever. I guess one question is, how important is an adoption lever in what we recommend for ONC to consider next year?
Yeah, another great point. And I think that is a challenge that we do need to bring up. So just like what Ike was saying, making sure that this is expanding throughout so many of the different areas, including public health, as well as some of our other entities. But then what is the incentive, as you said, what is the adoption lever? And is that's obviously something that we have to recommend for consideration by ONC, or else all the work that's being done will not be incorporated. So that's another really important point and consideration for that. Anna?
I'll just quickly build on that one just a little bit. One of the components that's a little challenging for laboratories in reporting data for public health is that a lot of the times they serve as middlemen or just as data conveyors for data that they haven't actually generated. So if things like pregnancy status or travel history or elements like that are not necessarily relevant to their processing the sample. So part of it is interoperability. Part of it is overall data flow. That how do we get the necessary data related to a laboratory report to where it needs to go? It may or may not be that it actually needs to get routed as part of a laboratory transaction.
Mm-hmm. Great points, all very good points. And so that will be great to synthesize as we're thinking through this report for providing those different kind of thoughts and recommendations to ONC on those solutions for that. So all great points. Anna, I see your hand.
A couple of thoughts. One is, I think Jim's point about, you know, are there levers that we can use is an important one, whether or not we, you know, perhaps we need to proactively identify the need for one or like make recommendations about what could be developed. But I guess the other thought that I have is, it's really around like statutory authority for the agencies to act, like whether or not we're asking the agencies to do something that's within their statutory authority as things are currently written, whether it's in CURES or any other piece of legislation, or whether or not we're recommending to Congress that there should be some sort of statutory, you know, legislation developed to enable a particular thing. And one of the things that I'm thinking about is during the pharmacy work group last year, we made a series of recommendations. I was very active in suggesting some recommendations around data transparency related to medication availability, distribution, like medication basically the amounts of medication that were at different distribution centers. Because one of the things that we've seen, particularly within the context of drug shortages, but not only drug shortages, is that the amount of work that it takes for patients to be able to locate a pharmacy that has their medication is really challenging. And the ability to be able to reliably trust that when a pharmacy says that they're working on their medication fulfillment, that it's actually going to happen. I'm currently waiting on two medications that have been in development, the prescription's been in process for more than a week. I'm completely out of both of them. And it's impossible to actually speak to the pharmacy to actually find out if they have it in stock and they're preparing it, if it's been ordered, if it's not been ordered, if there's an outage at the distribution center. And this just creates a remarkable amount of workload on behalf of the patient, as well as the physician who is then required, for instance, a doctor was asked to send a pharmacist, a new prescription into a different pharmacy because whatever. Anyway, just those kinds of things,
right,
as it relates to information that would be super helpful for reducing patient burden, that could be fixable through accessible APIs and data that's already there in a structured format that is being shared in one form or another, but for which ONC has no statutory authority.
So what I'm hearing, Anna, is while we're discussing this topic, we need to, to your point, is this within ONC's jurisdiction and their authority or not? And I think that that's an incredibly important question, and maybe we can pose that back to our ONC staff. So what we are mentioning right now, would this be, so for instance, in terms of thinking about the data quality and integrity, as well as the expansion across various different organizational entities, but then also having the various different levers to ensure accountability and incorporation of this, maybe the ONC staff can come back to us to say if this is within their jurisdiction and statutory responsibilities or authorities for this topic. So all really good points. Thank you for that.
And this kind of gets to the crux of the challenge I have in getting my head around exactly what it is we're trying to do. Are we trying to give a report on the status of things that ONC has been working on? Are we making recommendations for what we think ONC should be doing within their current statutory authority? Or are we making recommendations to Congress about what we think they need to be considering within the context of, legislation about what needs to happen to actually support the, health data related objectives that we all have and that they share?
So I would say, Anna, the latter too. So we are here to provide direct recommendations to ONC, but we are also here to provide overall recommendations to the Secretary and Congress based off of what we feel as HITECH is needed in order to ensure that we have the appropriate standards, policies, and programs that support that health IT infrastructure to promote greater overall health and well-being. So I would say the latter two are the primary objectives of what we're doing, supporting ONC, and also giving recommendations to ONC, especially in their overall jurisdiction, but then also, again, being that hopefully that group that's pushing the envelope a little bit of saying these are the true recommendations that we also want to provide to all of Congress, to all of the various different agencies within this domain.
And perhaps, when we think about how we're going to write this, after we choose our topics, et cetera, maybe we have a section that specifically denotes these are things that Congress needs to do if we want to achieve these objectives.
Absolutely. So that's a great point. And so all of our team, our ONC staff is on, as well as our contractors. And there's going to be a lot of changes to the format of the report this year. So we'll definitely pin that item. You all, due to time, I'm going to move on to the next one, supporting image interoperability. And so there's a couple of different things that have come up. And I know that, Sarah, you have mentioned that this came up in the ISWG work group. Any additional thoughts that you or anybody has on this topic?
Thank you so much, Madel. I'm just going to hold up the fact that we went into great depth with it with subject matter experts. And so should we choose to investigate this, a lot of the recommendations that came out of that subject matter expert presentation would be relevant. I am by no means an expert in this. Our friend Stephen Lane and ONC worked together to get a pretty solid presentation last year, but it was identified as a critical gap, and happy to recenter that and support that should we consider to go forward with it again.
That's excellent. So if those recommendations are already part of ISWG, one of the things that we have done before is pulled recommendations from other work groups into this work group, just so that there is that full alignment. So it sounds like we need to go a little bit deeper into what was reported out for ISWG. So thank you, Sarah. Any other thoughts or items about supporting image interoperability?
Just that it's super important.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, I think the point that Steve has made on actually the bandwidth challenges with moving images around, especially for rural, is a big consideration. I think we all have heard about the implementation of infrastructure to allow connectivity, but it is still a big issue across the country for many individuals and even clinics, to be honest. I provided some feedback recently where you'd imagine that clinical practices here in Austin, Texas would all be wired and have data access, but it's not necessarily the case. Our behavioral health providers were challenged to have connectivity access. So I think that's an important point. Thank Ike for pointing that out. And I saw some hand come up. Maybe it was Hannah.
You have a it comment? Was Hannah.
It was me, but I put it down because I was jumping the gun. I was.
Okay. Okay. No worries. All right. Wonderful. And so any other comments or thoughts? I mean, I think we're all in full agreement that this is a critical gap. This is an area that we need to amplify and elevate. And all the additional considerations of image interoperability as well, especially in terms of access and resources and capacity. All right, no other comments. Now, Jim, I do see what you did put in the chat, and I don't know the answer to that. I don't know if some of our ONC staff do know the answer to Jim's comments, but I think that is an important piece for us to know as the annual report work group, but then also just in the past, if there really has been those true kind of clear recommendations to ONC/Congress, but especially Congress of needing to support ONC in various different ways. So I don't know if Peter or Michelle want to comment on that.
Yeah, this is Peter. I'll defer to Michelle to see if you have any comments here. But if not, that's something that we can definitely note and take back and get some more information on items that have been recommended and where those items have led to Congress or any kind of influencing of enacting those recommendations.
Michelle, any thoughts there? Well, we'll come back.
Sorry, I was double muted. No, I was just going to say, so I've been at ONC a long time. I know this has come up before. I'm not going to trust my memory on details of if it was during the high tech or another advisory committee or other project. And the appetite for going forward with that to Congress shifts a lot because it depends on the Congress, depends on our leadership, depends on the topic. So we'll take that back to our leadership and say, okay, in this current situation, do we want to go forward through this process, or is there some other way to channel this feedback? So we'll look into that and get back to you.
Thank you, Michelle. Thank you so much, Peter. Okay, we're going to go on to the next topic, which is privacy of sensitive health data. This is a topic that we did explore in last year's annual report, but of course, it's a very important topic that continues to come back up. And this was suggested by Michael Chang as well as Ike about patient privacy and patient control over their health data are important concepts. The report should acknowledge the variability in how privacy and security practices are currently carried out and how they should be implemented. So want to open it up for any thoughts or discussion on this topic. And also just right now, how expansive it should be as well, because we know that the discussion over sensitive health data comes in many different forms. And then again, how we should make sure that we are implementing it, and almost as if there should be criteria or standards for that. So any thoughts about this?
And I see that Hannah has her hand up.
Thank you.
Oh, yes. Yes, Hannah.
Thanks so much. This is what I sort of prematurely raised my hand for previously. So yes, I absolutely echo this. You guys know this is sort of my, you know, area where I have a lot of thoughts. I agree that privacy and security is an applicable target area. I also think that equity is an applicable target area as well. So if we are thinking about a matrix approach where we think about multiple target areas assigned, interoperability is also a target area, as we often limit interoperability when we put all or none controls over sensitive data, and we limit the utility of our interoperable exchange of data at this time. In terms of how things should be implemented, I think that's a lot of ongoing work, and certainly happy to share that as we kind of move forward on some of the work that's being done around this. And we can certainly have some others who are working on this with me come speak to this group. But investing more in understanding this, both from an equity lens and in a furthering of our interoperability infrastructure or ecosystem lens, will be, I think, really helpful. But yes, I think we tend to think of this under privacy and security, but I think there are a lot of other target areas that this impacts as well.
Thank you, Hannah, for those comments. And I fully agree with you. This actually intersects in many different areas. And I would also say, not like in addition to equity and making sure that we are having equitable access, care delivery, and outcomes, but then also in terms of the interoperability piece. But I also want to just put in, which is not necessarily underneath one kind of quote unquote target area, this privacy of sensitive health data also has significant just clinical care and quality of care implications as well across the board. And so I think that this is something that we need to dive deeper into in terms of what some of those additional recommendations may look like when it comes to the various different forms of sensitive health data. And even those, that's true definition of what we, even as high tech in the annual report work group, are referring to as sensitive health data. So I think this is a very important topic for us to dive into and kind of expand and flesh out a little bit more, so it does have the impactful recommendations that we should be providing. Any other thoughts on the privacy of sensitive health data? Okay, excellent. I don't see any more hands or comments. So we'll keep on going on down to the next page. All right, these are the last two, and then I'll turn it on over to LEL2 for the additional potential topics. So patient-generated health data. This has been something that was also slightly covered in fiscal year 2023, brought up by Aaron, but it was also brought up by Anna as well. But really, looking at the discussion of integration of EHRs with medical devices, but maybe doesn't go far enough. And there's ongoing need for more open and standards-based access to data from these medical devices. And these data are critical for the provision of modern healthcare, yet it continues to be difficult for patients and physicians across the country to access these PGHD from medical devices from their area. So this falls underneath the target area of patient access to information. But one of the things that we discussed in our last annual report work group, our last annual report, is that this actually impacts, again, providers, being physicians and other healthcare professionals, as well as patients, because lack of interoperability and gaining access to that patient-generated health data, specifically from medical devices. So wanted to see if there's any additional thoughts or revisions or additions to that. Anna, I saw your hand go up first.
This has been a big issue of mine for 13 years, I would say. And I've led efforts back when Farzad Mastashari was the head of ONC to get a bunch of patients to try to get ONC to include it in meaningful use. clearly that didn't work. I think it's super important, not just for patient care, which is critical, but also what, you know, I've been on lots of like quality CMS quality measure committees over the years, and we have to have this sort of data, particularly with diabetes, but diabetes is sort of like the, you know, canary in the coal mine in terms of like the potential utility of using this stuff. But it's absolutely essential as it relates to the development of real quality measures that matter far more than some of these incremental biomarkers that are being tested. So it's about patient care, it's about physician access and truly informed physician decision making. But it's also, you know, thinking about what kind, how do we want to assess what quality health is and what health is and what disease is. You know, again, diabetes is, you know, we're an early entrant into this space, but there are some, the types of sensors are proliferating and this stuff needs to be incorporated into the EHR. It has to be a priority.
Wonderful. Thank you for that. Absolutely. Ike?
Thank you. I think that interoperability here is a key component, perhaps not patient access to information, at least in the traditional way in terms of patients accessing information from providers. This is a little bit different. I do think that it's important that we figure out or address the quality of the data that's actually generated in terms of what device or what mechanisms are used to generate the data for submission and the conditions under which that data is collected, just from a utility of data, from a data quality, usability side on the other end to help ensure or facilitate the collection and forwarding of good quality data that can actually really inform accurately the delivery of healthcare and not be inaccurate data that might lead to some false conclusions or inappropriate conclusions. You know, a bad pulse oximeter that doesn't comply with standards and the numbers are always off, as an example, feeding in bad data would not be helpful.
Absolutely. And
I would agree. I wouldn't categorize this as patient access to information, because we have access to the information 24/7. It's more around ensuring appropriate care and really about the development of the quality measures that have any kind of relevance.
Yeah, I think all of your points are well taken. And Ike, yes, it seems like this target area should be more of that interoperability, because we're trying to share the information between various different sources. And then, as you both are saying, that in quality of the data and standardization of the data, because we know these medical devices are sometimes putting out various different values that may kind of skew things one way or the other. So this is a huge area to consider, because we're lacking this data, but then even the data, we have to make sure that it's accurate data for it to be actionable as well. So thank you for those comments. Any other comments? Yeah, go ahead.
I do wonder if we should have another magic asterisk, if you will, or another category that tags data quality as a priority item, and including that as a reference or as an additional category for these items, because there's a lot of focus in data quality in other spaces or data usability in other spaces. And it might be really helpful to have that as a component in terms of how we're describing things, not only for our own work, but for helping it line up or being utilized by other parties, whether you're looking at things in the TEFCA world or other elements where they're focused on data quality and other components. And if we can use language that's consistent, that might help our report be even more useful at the end of the day.
That is a brilliant idea. And I love what you said, and Jim just put some additional items in the chat as well of quality, but also relevance, without a doubt. And I love that idea of trying to now for us to carve out, because in so much of what we're talking goes about data quality, integrity, and relevance, so that it's actionable. So that's something I would say if our ONC staff and contractors can help us think through that, because that seems to be a very common thread that we're seeing in everything, all the way from in throughout every target area, throughout all of artificial intelligence, throughout all of interoperability. So health equity for sure. So great idea. Jim?
Yeah, one area that may be useful, maybe I should mention in another section, but the data, you know, we've done a pretty good job as a country, I think, of dealing with the pipes the data goes through, right? TEFCA, for example, is live now. We've also done a pretty good job of defining the terminologies and the content format, right? But what we haven't addressed is how much data people send, right? And the reason I'm in this kind of piggybacks on the quality route, right? For example, when I was at HCA, we connected to Commonwell, who's now a QHIN, and I had the team look at a rate, you know, 180 hospitals, thousands of connections, randomly picked 100 different CCDs, CDAs that came across to evaluate what was in them. And what we found was the VA would send 2 years worth of data. Some places would send 90 days worth, but many people interpreted what they were supposed to send in USCDI format as just the very last encounter. So we had situations where someone was referred for a heart transplant from another system that had tons of cardiology tests and notes, but unfortunately the last encounter at that sending institution was a skin tag removal. Mm-hmm. And so the only thing that actually came across to the transplant surgeon was the skin tag removal data, right? And so we haven't addressed yet what expectations are for the breadth, for how far back people should go. And it's really important because a whole bunch of use cases when I was at HCA that we were touting evaporated because the completeness of the data, there was no understanding of how far back someone would send information. And so I think that's something that's been neglected and affects the value. I like to view it as the, you know, the water going through the pipes. How much is there? And I suggest that we recommend to ONC that they address that so the receiver has some expectation as to how much information is coming through.
Gosh, Jim, I can't agree with you more. I'm in an active project right now of bringing together numerous health systems and federally qualified health centers and clinics throughout a large region here in California and across the entire state. And exactly what you said, we've had this constant conversation of how far back do we go in order to pull the data in? And there's so much noise in so much of the data, it's almost not usable at times. So I think exactly that, having some recommendations on time periods, but gosh, if we're gonna be innovative, how you can even select some of the various different key clinical information that you need to be exchanged for whatever reason, that would be even more fantastic. So
can I make one more quick comment, use case? Even with fire, we're going to have to define how far back people go, right? Mm-hmm. So a public health use case, for example, somebody with new positive skin test, PPD skin test, right, has an abnormality on their chest x-ray. A chest x-ray from 6 years ago done at some other institution that indicates that there was an abnormality is the difference between needing to treat for active tuberculosis and realizing that it's okay. It's just an artifact, right? Mm-hmm. And so there are a plethora of clinical situations where everyone always talks about recency of data and how the relevance of data decreases as you go back in time. And though that's true, there are still really important use cases mm-hmm. where pre-deciding that you're only going to send 90 days or, you know, is a problem. And even in the fire world, where one day we can request, so we don't just send this giant payload, but instead we request the data we're looking for, even then, the source institution is going to have to be able to go back. And I think ONC needs to not be silent on how far back. I mean, pick a date, that way everybody knows, right? anyway,
Great. Thank you for those comments, Jim. All really important. Thank you, Hans, for your comments also in the chat. I know we're running really slow on time or back on time, so I'm going to kind of speed us up just a bit. Patient burden is the next one. This was suggested by both Anna and myself about patient burden and workflow are not considered enough in regulatory development, and the amount of effort for patients should be lessened when possible. How can health IT help assess this issue? Anna, any additional thoughts about this? This is underneath patient access to information. I also still don't know if that's the right target area for this, but we'd love to hear some of your thoughts about when this topic came up, and then I'll share some of mine as well.
Yeah, I would say patient access to information and but also interoperability. I mean, you know, it's, as I've said recently on a Sequoia board meeting, it's like, I'm not collecting my data because I have like some sort of health data scrapbook. I want the data to flow and like make it to the doctor so that I don't really have to worry about accessing it. I mean, and I do access it, but somebody like my mother is not capable of doing that. So it's really about interoperability and thinking about what can we do from a policy perspective to using, you know, through the context, within the context of health data, what can we do to release the amount of workload required for patients?
Great. And I like that as well. And I think where my thoughts were initially with this is as we continue to roll out various different regulations or even various different health IT platforms and infrastructures, we're not really doing it in a patient-centered way. And meaning that we're not doing it in an inclusive way of thinking about how best for the patients to receive that information or participate in that information. And so really thinking about more about accessibility and inclusivity when it comes directly from, you know, a course, multiple languages, the level of both health and digital literacy being involved, how best in terms of the modes of the, how that information should be received. That's one of the things about lessening patient burden so that the patients can take a much more active role in some of the, this, all of their health IT and all of their just overall patient care and be more engaged, and health IT can truly help to support that. So those were just some of my different thoughts when I was referring, when I think was talking about patient burden. We have continued to develop our health IT systems from the standpoint of developers and or oftentimes practitioners and not from the lens of a patient, which it needs to be included.
Right. And what we've seen is that as, you know, many of these things have been developed, the result has been an increase in patient workload. It's somewhat paradoxical. Because the amount of things that you have to do, the number of portals, the number of documents, the number of connections you have to make, cumulatively, particularly if you have a complex set of chronic diseases like I do, it just is a lot. And the burden has increased and the stress and anxiety has increased rather than decreased over the years. Yeah.
Thank you, Anna. Any other thoughts about this topic, about not only streamlining, but then also making things much more interoperable, but also accessible and inclusive with, from the patient perspective? No, I'm not seeing any. Okay. Well, Elia, I'm going to turn it on over to you for the other potential topics based on research.
Thanks, Mabel. And I know we're running short on time, but those comments on the chat by Hans and Jim are quite important there in terms of retention of patient data. I just wanted to highlight those, how, we agree with Jim. We had specific details on how to do that on paper, but not anymore in the digital world. And quite important that these days, like if I go to a clinician, I tell them my whole story, because likely they can't even find in my records, in my for 50 years of existence. Just want to highlight that point before I start. But I think these other topics here based on research shows that they're all covered in the 2023 report. And they cover areas related to health equity, public health, and interoperability as well. So the first one, very important one here, which I think the summary doesn't, you know, give enough credit on how the importance of use of artificial intelligence in healthcare, especially when it relates to health equity, that organizations and coalitions are increasingly pursuing initiatives to ensure AI is used in a safe and non-biased ways. I think you saw on our AI hearing how much we still unclear what to do here. So I just want to highlight how this specific area has so much just in terms of health equity, trustworthy AI, and many other topics under that umbrella. I'll go to the next one, and then I think we have another one in the next page, but maybe you'll open up for comments. The second one here, optimizing public health data exchange and infrastructure, we covered that a little bit and in the previous comments. One thought that I had when we were discussing was the fact that we're talking about labs, exchanges, and standards, and the fact that I think we didn't even address ever since the pandemic, the fact that these at-home tests were being distributed everywhere and we had no idea what the results were, positive or negative, and there was no way to even share that information to highlight from a public health perspective what's really going on. So by doing at-home labs, that creates other challenge in terms of data capture as well. But I think you all know that during the pandemic, we show the need to have that improve with public health systems. And the federal government is taking those steps through the CDC data modernization and the North Star architecture and ONC Staffica. They'll help further advance interoperability and healthcare providers and public health authorities. But on top of all that, we're talking about AI increasingly being used in public health to improve health outcomes, enhance disease surveillance, prevent diseases, and respond to health emergencies. So there's a lot here between AI and all these efforts that are taking place across the country between different agencies. But how do we bring it all together and optimize public health activities? So before we jump to the next one, I want to pause there for a second, see any comments. And I see Hannah. Anna, you have your hand up. And then Mandel.
Me or Hannah?
Anna. Sorry okay. About that. Anna,
One question, and then I'll get into my comment, the substantive comment. I was wondering if Excel or ONC could add like the list of applicable target areas somewhere. I was just looking for it in the slide deck, just because, with regard to patient generated health data, patient burden, I don't think those applicable target areas are completely on. And I would also agree the use of artificial intelligence in healthcare, health equity. I mean, obviously health equity is a big issue that needs to be considered. But I would also, I also think that my hunch at this point, which could be completely misguided, is that one of the things that we should do is to think through all of the different ways that ONC or that we should think about what are potential applications are appropriate for artificial intelligence. For instance, the use of AI to develop composite biomarker, digital biomarkers could be really helpful. It might be a bad idea, it might be a great idea. That all depends upon the data quality and what the quality, the level of whether or not you can trust the quality of the data. And one of the things that I think is most promising, one of the many areas that I think is promising about potential use of AI, is the ability to improve data quality. Because if you look at the data within the EHRs, and I've looked, when I have my analytics company, I looked at EHR data, it's a mess. When I look at my data through my portal and download it, the idea that raw data would be fed into AI and like somebody would make a decision based off of that is terrifying. but the potential to use AI to actually turn that data into something usable, I think is a very helpful use. It could be helpful and maybe the shortest road home to getting us, you know, to where we need to be in terms of exchanging.
Almost off.
So, I think limiting it to health equity is cutting short the potential benefits of artificial intelligence. And I have significant concerns about the misuse of AI, you know, concerns about using it as a way of gating access to particular medications. We've seen some horrible case studies of how that's done.
I'll hold you on for a few more minutes.
We need to be cognizant of those harms, potential harms, but we also need to be really excited, I would hope, about the potential benefits of AI and how that can be used to help us solve some of these other problems. So again, it's less about the topic and more about what is the applicable target area. And
yes, great comments, Anna. I couldn't agree more. And I think that the hearing that we had on AI, I think we touched a little bit on those steps, right? What is the source data that we're really using? And is it even valid? And I even questioned, if you remember, our FDA colleague that was there, if we consider having a similar process as we have in drug development, where there is a design of methods, you know, that's done in a contained environment first and then moves on to be tested in a specific population, a specific, real setting, and eventually move to the larger population, but needs to be monitored for, you know, the long run in a surveillance system to see if that algorithm or method is still doing what it's supposed to do. So there's so many things that need to be addressed in terms of AI that data quality becomes the central point of it. So totally agree on that.
Yeah, I just don't want to, I mean, again, I'm the one that used the word potentially diabolical during the high-tech meetings. I have grave concerns about it with regard to health equity and a variety of other things. But I don't want us to only look at AI through the lens of this could be a potential harm, because we're also seeing some remarkably compelling case studies of how just simple AI, I mean, not simple, but like consumer level AIs such as ChatGPT are providing remarkable insights from a mess of data that made absolutely no sense, that have been really helpful in solving some pretty important problems. Okay. So anyway.
Thank you. Madel, you have your hand up.
Yes, I do. And while we're looking at these target areas, I have a significant revision, and I just caught this, to design and use of technologies that advance health equity. I would make a strong recommendation to change this language because it can be perceived as just incorrect and also just a little off, where it says, for people to reach their full health potential regardless of socially determined circumstances. That is actually very fatalistic and fixed, and that's not how we tend to talk about health equity. And so I would make a strong recommendation to change this language for to help all people attain their full potential, health potential, period. And we don't have to put the regardless of socially determined circumstances, because these circumstances are not determined. The other thing we could say is full health potential regardless of identity and experiences. That would be perfect. But I would just say, please change that bottom line, and I'm happy to work with you on that. But now going back to what I was going to talk about, if we are able to go back to the list of the various different topics, it was talking about all the various different coalitions around AI and what to really do with them. And I think that this is of an important piece. I agree with everything that Anna mentioned, that this goes beyond health equity, but we really wanna make sure that we are identifying and mitigating any forms of algorithmic bias or underrepresented data sets that we know are going to produce disparate outcomes. And so for this topic in itself, I think we do need to expand out a bit more about what this means. And is this that we're saying for the organizations and the coalitions that are trying to pursue these initiatives, that that ONC does provide some recommendations or criteria for how they go about it, or if it's industry that we're leaning on to try to make some of these various different recommendations to promote greater safe and trustworthy and non-biased AI, still, what is the goal for ONC? Is ONC going to adopt some of those standards in order to disseminate across the country? Because one of the things that we clearly know is that the organizations that have lots of resources, and I'll say, for instance, like my organization, we have AI governance committees. We are going through AI significantly in order to try to make sure it's safe, trustworthy, non-biased. But then we know we have many other organizations that are more under-resourced, that do not have the expertise, that may not have all the people at the table to do these very extensive evaluations of AI. And in all actuality, going back to the potential benefits of AI, really it's our more under-resourced communities and public health agencies and healthcare providers that could benefit from truly safe and non-biased AI to expand their ability to care for individuals and populations. So I think that that's something that's really important that we can, like, that we as the work group and HITECH think about what this means in terms of the use of AI to promote, yes, greater health equity, but to promote just greater overall health outcomes for all communities and populations.
Thanks, Madel. Great points. I couldn't agree more about the fact that different organizations have different capabilities and going to become harder and harder for each one of them to decide what to use and not to use. Someone needs to be, maintaining an eye on that and being the assistance, unbiased assistant for all organizations out there to be able to use these systems. I see three hands up, Anna first and then Hannah next.
I'll go quickly. I'm just wondering, to the point that I was making previously about the target areas, those are relatively limiting target areas. And I understand that we were, created by 21st Century Cures, and, that's a lot of legislation upon which all of our work rests. But I'm just wondering if we need to think beyond those five target areas and perhaps have a separate section of or some sort of a section within the annual report that says these are things that are not within the target areas as defined, 7 years ago by the 21st Century Cures Act. These are ones that are emerging that need to be considered that are outside of those target areas. Because those are very limiting. There are lots of things that have happened since 21st Century Cures legislation was developed. And I think the idea of advising Congress or giving a report to Congress about what is needed that is limited to those five areas sort of limits our utility.
Yeah, thanks, Anna. That's a valid point. And I think the annual report's intent is exactly to provide recommendations, right? I think one area that we probably were not thinking about and wasn't really even clear 5-10 years ago was AI. And as you can see, that's all we talk about these days. I think that could be a space on the report where I think we talked about in the last meeting where most of the recommendations probably won't fall in one of those. But I think there is a space there to say, this is a completely new area that we need to consider overall, and AI could be one of those. So thank you for that. Hannah?
Yeah, thanks, Elio. Around AI and to Madel's point, right, there are many organizations, including medium-sized organizations and resource-strapped organizations, are putting together AI governance and robust AI governance. But some of the larger organizations are really investing in these sort of AI assurance labs. And I think I would like to see better definition around what makes an AI assurance lab, what is expected from an AI assurance lab, and how is that different from other sort of AI governance frameworks that are being stood up, maybe at lower resourced sort of organizations. What do we expect to come out of AI assurance labs? And to Madel's point, right? Are is there some expected standard that needs to go through sort of a standards development or certification process as directed by ONC and not just through an AI assurance lab, right? That is sort of expected. I think all of this is evolving right now, but I think that is one area that I would really like to see some better clarification on as we sort of address this topic.
Great point, Hannah. And as you're speaking, I'm just thinking here that our own Mickey Tripathi has been named now our AI lead as well. So, but just thinking on that point specifically is that there is likely a place where all these needs to come together, right? Because there's so much information from what you just described, and then trustworthy AI, and you know, and then regulations around it and whatnot that I think all of us probably getting lost a little bit with how much is being produced out there on how we're going to govern this and support. So great point. I want to move on to Ike because we still have one more topic to cover.
Thank you. This may be a parking lot issue, but thinking about the intersection between AI, patient burden, patient-generated data, we haven't talked at all really about research, on medical research and clinical trial kind of components. And that's probably something that really is a cross-cutting element that impacts an awful lot of these activities and this information sharing, thinking about sensitive data that I might not want to share for some purposes that I might be very interested in sharing as part of a clinical trial that I'm participating in. In my particular case, AI helped identify potential drugs that could potentially be used to treat my condition. So I think that's another element that we might want to consider putting on in the parking lot or something to be considered, because ITAC really has not talked much about the intersection between clinical care, research, and patient engagement. And I think that's a ripe opportunity.
Great point. And I think goes along well with the one that we had in terms of patient consent, right? Which is still a challenge that we need to address and how to, you know, allow the patient to have a voice and decide on things like that. But at the same time, yes, there's so much knowledge being generated at AI and identification of individuals that can participate and build into what we call the learning health system, right? On how we uncover new challenges and feed that into practice to be utilized by others. So great point. We have one more section to cover. So before that, any other thoughts, questions before I move on to the next page? Anyone? Hearing none, can you scroll down a bit to the next? The last topic we have is on interoperability again. And this is very much related to LTPAC, so long-term and post-acute care interoperability. And as you can see here in 2023, the HHS Office of the Assistant Secretary of Planning and Evaluation published a report about the adoption of EHRs by LTPAC settings, noting that 80% of nursing home and home health organizations had adopted them, but the interoperability exchange of health IT is not widely or routinely used. The report states that more tracking of the adoption and use of IT is needed to create additional baseline and benchmarks to aid the inclusion of LTPAC providers in health IT and interoperability programs and regulations. ASP also suggests an improved LTPAC participation in HIEs, including easing data sharing barriers and clarifying HIN vendor and provider relationships. And I'll just offer on one thought there, how we, the LTPACs, the EHRs, are not necessarily certified EHRs, right? Which means for HIE connectivity and other communications between EHR vendors, it becomes quite challenging because they might not necessarily have the ability to do so. That include behavioral health providers as well. Ike, you have a question there? You have a hand up?
Are we going to come back around to the public health? element that was the last one on the previous page?
We can. I mean, I think we had it open for questions, and I guess maybe no one comment on that specifically. I read to both at the same time, but yes, we can go back to that. Ike, if you have that comment on that point.
If there are no comments, we don't necessarily need to touch it, but it's obviously a subject that is worthy of attention.
Right. No, definitely. Any comments on that or in this last bullet point related to LTPAC interoperability?
So Elliot, just to make sure, we are, if we go back up Excel, we want to still make sure for optimizing public health data exchange and infrastructure to gather if there's any questions or comments or additions to this topic as well. Correct. That's what we're doing. Okay.
That's correct.
Thoughts? I don't necessarily have additional comments about these, but I have some thoughts about other things we may want to include. What's the best? Should I talk about that now, or is there? Are we going to be adding things to this document?
We're absolutely adding things. We're just trying to go through the current topics right now, just to make sure that there's no additions, but we absolutely are going to be adding things from the work group.
Okay.
Yeah, just, this is Steve, really quickly. I think looking at public health, it's important to highlight that it's a collaboration between federal, state, and local governments and healthcare providers, that there are lots of actors involved. It's not just a single group with a single set of stakeholders.
Great point, go ahead.
I think some of the challenges, and where public health may have an awful lot to contribute in thinking about things about TEFCA, is looking at the data quality components and public health's long history of focused on data quality in onboarding, which is not has been a little bit variable in other spaces, and that's an area that needs to get improved in looking at TEFCA adoption to really be useful to public health, is again a constant focus on ensuring the data that's coming across is of high quality, including timeliness, accuracy, and the other components, I think is really kind of vital.
Yes, thanks, Ike. I think your point there on getting the different levels of the government aligned is quite important. I see here you and I are here in Austin, where we have our public health agency here, but at the same time we are at the state level because we are in the capital city, and then we are collaborating with our CDC partners and others. So it becomes a real collaboration across several pieces of the government, in addition to the organizations on the ground that are providing public health services. So great point on that. Any thoughts here, or any besides that, Ike or others, any other points that we need to consider here for the public health data exchange and infrastructure? All right, I'm making sure that I'm giving enough time here this time. But hearing none, maybe we can then proceed to the last one that I read previously related to our interoperability for LTPAC. Thoughts, questions, comments on this one? Quite important that I can put my HIE hat here today and say that's not very easy to access data from LTPACs. At the same time, they're critical, and we all have seen that throughout the pandemic, how even more critical was important to get access to that data. But we have several challenges there, and the fact that they were not part necessarily of meaningful use and do not necessarily have to comply with many of the interoperability requirements that we have for other vendors and technologies.
I would like to call into the group DME providers as well as a special call out.
Which providers, Ike? I'm sorry.
Durable medical equipment providers.
Durable medical equipment, yes.
To ensure that they are included, because that becomes really, really important for many folks, but thinking about getting the right equipment to care for a long-term condition and getting it serviced and coordinated with what your actual medical needs are would be great. I mean, a little wish in the back of my head would be, gee, if you had durable medical equipment at home and we're going in for a hospital visit, wouldn't it be great if that note could go to the hospital so that the mattress could get rotated out if you had a special need without having to wait 3 days to get the accommodation in the hospital, just as an example of where there's that opportunity for improved coordination.
Great suggestion, Ike. I couldn't agree more. In the time and age that we are living through, global warming and whether you agree or not, but the weather disruptions that we have had, quite important for individuals with durable equipment that they actually have power, and we are working here with in our backyard with Austin Energy to actually address and identify and become quite important that for infrastructure services like electricity, that we have access to records in some way to identify the individuals that need the most help in terms of a disaster when there is a disaster strike. And as you can see, we have many all over the place. Great suggestion.
And at that point, would it be a good idea to include potentially social hooks, for lack of a better terminology, here for peripheral services that are not necessarily provided by traditional HIPAA-covered entities? I'm not quite sure how to capture that from a concept perspective. This is almost limited use, limited extension of HIPAA for special needs when you're thinking about power or other supportive services. I don't know. That might be too big a reach.
Yeah, I think we had on the list there that Mendel read early about the key priority, that came out. There was some mention there about social and other types of organizations that also need to be on, interoperable with us. And there are so many, as you can imagine, that I think that LTPACs were the first one that rose to the top, let's say. As ones that have electronic health record systems but are not really communicating with the other clinical providers, and that's one that we want to target first. But I agree with you, there are quite a few others, including social and other types of services to be integrated. Other thoughts or questions, anyone? I think we are at 10 minutes mark, and if none left, I'll turn it back to you, Mendel.
Thank you so much, Eliel. So one of the things we're going to do next is just, we're going to do this rapid fire, you all, because we're going to have to probably come back to expand upon some of the various different topics. But we just wanted to grasp some of your ideas in terms of potential topics for the annual report work group. So does anyone have any additional topics they at least want to put on the table? And then we will likely have to circle back around to it to expand upon it a bit more. So any additional topics?
I do.
Okay, go ahead, Anna.
And there may be more. one of the things that we talked about, I'm trying to remember, maybe it was the HGI one work group. But one of the things that is important to me, and I think is increasingly important, is transparency around the use of data. I mean, HIPAA gives quite a bit of latitude to data holders about what they can do with data once it's been quote unquote de-identified. but there's no sort of like compensatory requirement around disclosing what the data has been used for. And I think that's very much needed. And it's an oversight, particularly within the context of the, you know, continually deteriorating social trust. So, I mean, I'm somebody who thinks that it's really important for data to be de-identified and used for secondary research. But I think it's equally important for that to continue. I think it's equally important for there to be disclosures about how that data is used or has been used. So, yeah. I mean, that's just, I would love to make some sort of proposal. It's probably outside of the statutory authority of ONC, but or CMS, but it's something that I think needs to be taken very seriously.
And I agree with you. And I think that we should definitely put that on the table and explore what is within ONC's kind of boundaries, but that's such an important topic. And it's an important topic for all patients, but it's definitely also a highly important topic for vulnerable populations or populations that have been historically discriminated against within medicine and in terms of science, since we know the history of our country. So I think that that's such an important piece about transparency of the release of data for other uses, including specifically research and other items. So absolutely. I have two that I'm just going to throw on the table. And then also, please, from the work group, if there's any other additional topics. ONC is currently exploring behavioral health and interoperability and what that means and what that looks like. So I would like to put that also on the list of potential topics for the annual report to highlight. What does that look like in order to ensure that we are having greater access to behavioral health and mental health information in terms of our interoperability? We just haven't really focused as much on mental health and behavioral health aspects. And that's such a huge important topic in for our country. The second topic I would like to put on the table as well is during our last HITECH meeting, we of course had a discussion about health equity by design. We know that health equity by design is a priority for ONC, definitely a priority for our national coordinator. And I think that not only through the annual report work group, but also hopefully through some other type of task force, we can actually provide recommendations of what truly health equity by design means in health IT and in our health IT infrastructure standards and programs. So I would like to also recommend that potential topic of truly putting action behind what health equity by design means for health IT. So Anna, I see that your hand is up and we have one more minute before we proceed to public comment.
The only other thing for now that I would add is, again, something else that came up during, I think it was the HTI 1 work group, is sort of accounting of access of who has accessed medical records. You know, that's something, it came up in a couple of different, you know, the sub work groups for the HTI 1 and or task force, whatever the nomenclature is. But it's something that should be, I think it's part of the legislation. So nobody's figured out how to do it well historically, but it's gotten easier to do that sort of accounting of disclosures, accounting of access. So it's something, I know it's complicated, far more complicated than it sounds, but it's something that I think needs to be considered.
Excellent. Thank you for that recommendation, Anna. Well, I'm now going to turn it back over to Peter for our public comment. So Peter, I'll turn it over to you.
Thanks, Madel. We would like to open the meeting for public comment at this time. If you are on Zoom and would like to make a comment, please use the hand raise function, which is located on the Zoom toolbar at the bottom of your screen. If you are joining by phone only, please press *9 to raise your hand and get in queue. And once called upon, press *6 to mute and unmute your line. All public comments are limited to 3 minutes. And I do not currently see any comments that have come in through the chat. And Excel is noting that there are no public commenters on the phone line at this time. We'll give it a few more moments. All right, not seeing any public comments. Madel, I will turn it over back to you for closing remarks and meeting adjourning.
Great, thank you so much, Peter. And thank you so much to all of our annual report work group members. This has been a wonderful conversation. This is just the first of many. And so what I would say is let's continue to think about any additional topics we may want to add, or if some of the topics that we discuss may not be of higher priority. And we will then proceed on with trying to figure out what the next steps are for capturing those topics as well. But just want to appreciate all of your participation and all of your insights and perspectives. This is why this work group is one of the best ones. And so Eliel, I'll turn it on over to you for your closing comments.
Thank you, Mandel, and thank you everyone. I think this was a great first meeting. I hope it gives you a taste and maybe food for thought to start developing additional ideas for us to discuss next. And we're looking forward to talking to you again soon. Thank you very much.
Thanks, everyone. Have a great day.
Thank you.
All right, bye-bye.